Is the sound good? Okay. So I'm Brooks Davis. I work for the Aerospace Corporation, and today we're going to talk. I'm going to talk a bit about porting high-performance computing tools to FreeBSD. First, a little background. At the Aerospace Corporation, we built a FreeBSD-based computing cluster starting about 7 years ago. And have been revising and upgrading it since then. It's 352 nodes. They're 1U dual socket systems of various sorts. Currently, mostly AMD, with the most recent boxes, which are actually a few years old at this point, being Intel Xeons. It's about 1,400 cores. They range from, I think, single core CPUs to four-core CPUs. And so in the process of building this thing, since we didn't take the default direction of going Linux or going with a turnkey cluster from Sun or something, we ended up porting a lot of tools. And so I'm going to talk a bit about that and talk a bit about my pet peeves about application portability and things like that, as well as hopefully convincing you that a lot of these things are actually pretty easy to port. And I think that actually applies to porting in general. There are things where, you know, you got to write a little code, but the amount you have to write is pretty small. And often it's pretty straightforward to figure out what you need to do. So we ported a number of tools. The three here are the ones that I'm going to talk about today. It's a SunGrid engine, which is a batch queuing and a job submission system, as well as a little bit of general resource discovery, since you can run interactive jobs with it. Ganglia, which is a cluster monitoring system, commonly used in HPC. It was written for HPC, but it's also used in the ISP area to provide quick status on a number of things. And then OpenMPI, which is one of several implementations of the message passing interface, which is an API for writing message-based parallel programs. So I'll start off with Ganglia. This is a snapshot, actually, off of one of our Linux clusters, since the thing was up at the moment, that I needed a snapshot. Just shows a number of different things that are collected by the metric, and then the graphs are rendered using the RRD tools. So collects memory use, CPU load, CPU cycle distribution of CPU times, and network load. So all of these things that are collected are called metrics in Ganglia, and they're collected from each node. There's a daemon on the node that sends things out in this customized, extremely compact format. They were very focused on keeping the packet size down, and they're sent out periodically. The period depends on administrator configuration, as well as whether or not there are things that change. For instance, OS version is sent extremely infrequently because it's assumed it doesn't change until the system reboots. There's also some things that incorrectly assume that's the case, such as a number of active CPUs and CPU speed, both of which can change. But for historical reasons, those are still static things. So they send out all this different information, and all of that internally is done through a set of functions called providers that return either a string or numeric value. As I'll show you on the next slide, it's all smashed up into a union type. Whoa. And they're all mashed into a union type, and then returned to the daemon. The daemon then sends those out to a central collector, which takes the data, sticks it into an RRD database, and then you can graph it or query the data directly. Additionally, the most recent versions of Ganglia support have a modular plug-in system as opposed to the old hard-coded system, although I'll be mostly talking about the hard-coded system. So the general process of porting a metric is, you know, pretty straightforward, simple, nothing special. Basically, what I was doing when I was porting is I was aiming for parity with Linux. So I would just basically read through the Linux code and read all the metrics and say, okay, what does this metric actually mean? Some of them are really obvious, number of CPUs. although there was a big debate as to whether that was sockets or cores or threads. But you know, it's still obvious what that means given the results of that debate. For other things, it's more complicated, such as how is memory allocated? What types of memory allocations are there? And I'll go into that more in detail. But once you've figured that out, the next simple process is, okay, so I would just look around the system and say, okay, what command line tool can I use to get that information? How can I put that together? You know, usually with something like TOP or PS or swap info or something would have the information I needed. And then since it's all open source, you just read the code and figure out what it's doing internally, maybe read a few man pages to figure out, you know, because they may be doing something slightly different than you really want to do because they wanted a slightly different value or that sort of thing. But just really read the code, read the man pages, figure it out, and then write the appropriate code. The nice thing in the FreeBSD case is since Ganglia is BSD licensed, you could just copy it out of PS and stick it in there and slap the license block onto the top of the file and you're good to go. So it's really easy. In a few other cases, it was a little, some other projects it's a little more difficult, but still trivial. Oops, there we are. So here's a quick example of one metric. It's probably the simplest metric. Just goes in, grabs a so there's just a simple function, doesn't take any arguments. You call into it, you query the sysctl and say, yep, we've got this many CPUs, and then you return it. I'm not sure that a 16-bit value was very foresightful, but you know they were, you know. We're probably a few years off from blowing that out. Although I think Intel's proposing 4,000 core CPUs, so it may not be all that long before an unsigned 16-bit it is a problem. So that's really trivial. It's pretty much the simplest one. For a more interesting example, we'll look at the swap metrics. They had two metrics. There's a swap total, how much swap space is there in the system, and swap free, how much isn't being used. They could have done it the other way and listed swap used. Basically, they're interchangeable. And so in FreeBSD, the easiest way to obtain how much swap you have as an administrator is to go into the swap info command. And that's actually user pstat if you actually want to look at the source. You won't find a user sbin swap info or a user.sbin swap info directory in the source tree. And that actually is an interesting case because swap info supports obtaining the amount of swap through either through the KVM, the direct memory access interface, or through sysctl. And at the time we wrote this, things were a little more complicated than they should have been because we were supporting FreeBSD 4, because that's what our cluster was using, but FreeBSD 5 had introduced new interfaces through sysctl that were actually easy to use and straightforward. The problem for us is that we wanted to be able to support the sysctl interface in any compilation so that when it was MFC'd, and I think it eventually was, we could take advantage of that and stop requiring root privilege to go and grovel around in the kernel memory. Which is not particularly reliable at the best of times. So we ended up using libkvm when we had to, and then using sysctl, and we do a runtime probe, which I'll show you here in a moment. So the way we did this is Ganglia has a metric init function where you initialize whatever it is you need to actually make metric measurements at runtime. And so a section. This is just a section of the code, but basically what we ended up doing is we probe, we see if the swap info MIB is there. If it is, we set a variable, and we open up a null KVM handle because there are some things that you can use the libkvm interface to get where you don't actually go and grovel around in memory, or you only do that in the case that you're dealing with a core dump, which we're not in Ganglia since we're monitoring live systems. But we use a few of those functions elsewhere. In the case of not having the sysctl MIB, we actually open up a real file handle. This led to some debates within the community. I kept having to convince them, no, you really can't drop privileges until after you run this function, because I do have to have privilege here. and that sort of thing. But in general, this has been a reasonably functional method. And then we also cache copy of page size just because, and then cache whether or not to use the VM swap bib. For actually returning the data, this is out of the swap total function. The swap free function's almost identical, where we use that value of whether or not cached, whether or not CTL is available to decide which path to take. Code's slightly different because the different interfaces return slightly different data, but quite simple. Where we just the sysctls actually require us to total things a bit. This the one other issue here, and this is kind of an overall pet peeve of mine, is this sort of demonstrates where you do get into trouble. Is Ganglio is very much Linux focused, and so it has these set of metrics, which are metrics that Ganglia collect, or that Linux already produces for its memory, and it classifies its memory in this way, where things are buffers, cache, free, shared. And in FreeBSD, we have a whole different set of statistics, which, because our VM system is different. And I ended up making this mapping, which I'm not really happy with, but it was what I could get running at the time and wasn't too wrong, I hope. Part of the problem here is that in Linux, there's a fairly large free memory value, and Linux administrators expect that value will be large if you don't have an active program using lots and lots of memory. But in fact, on FreeBSD, we tend to leave it there as cache. So the values aren't really comparable, and that was kind of a pain. So this whole general mapping was an issue. In the end, these are the values I chose, and they're not perfect, but they do sort of work. As an aside, I think this is a general issue. You have this problem with memory use, but you'll also see it, for instance, in network protocol statistics, where different operating systems will gather different will have different statistics collection points, and so it's hard because either because their implementations are different or just because that's what's actually what they've instrumented, it's so if you end up with a monitoring system that hard codes for one operating system, you get the problem of generalizing from one example, and then everybody else ends up having to shim their whatever it is they're collecting into that model, and it's a generally annoying problem. One of the things I keep hoping the Ganglia community will do is add some sort of hierarchical metrics where you could give metrics that are reasonably unambiguous at the top, like how much memory do you have, and maybe some indication of how much of it is mapped into the kernel and how much of it is mapped into user space processes. And then operating system specific data could be provided for other values so you could track and have interesting data available for administrators of a given operating system while still providing something where I could look at my Linux cluster and my FreeBSD cluster and have some idea where they are relative to each other in terms of resource availability. So that's really the big thing. There are also some interesting problems where, for instance, one other metric they have is how much space is available on your file systems, both in terms of total space and free space. And then I've seen this in several code bases. They run into the problem: how do you decide which ones of those do you count? Because you really don't, in a cluster, you don't want to count the NFS. All your NFS volumes on every node, because then you've counted them multiple times, the usual obvious answer that people take is, okay, I'll take my UFS and ext2 and ext3fs file systems and that sort of thing, and those are local, and other things are remote or virtual, and we won't count them. But then you have meta questions, and I think this is just an interesting one to throw out. So, do we count file systems on a SAN as local or remote? And I think you could argue it either way. So it's just an interesting issue in overall in designing a good metadata schema. the one advice I would tend to give to people who are building monitoring systems is look to examples that are good, or where people have at least put a lot of work into the metrics, like SNMP. It has a lot of problems, but the MIBs at least are fairly well thought out. One other portability issue we ran into with Ganglia was that FreeBSD and all the Kame-derived networking IPv6 stacks deliberately violate the RFCs with regard to IPv4-mapped IPv6 sockets, which is to say there is one range of values in IPv6 which directly map onto IPv4. This was done for transitional reasons, so that you could have a host that was IPv6 only, but actually had an IPv4 address. So you could have an IPv6 socket open, and it would all just work. The reason FreeBSD and the other operating systems violate the RFC is that the RFC also specifies that if you've bound to an IPv6 socket, the IPv4 socket answers until something else binds to it. So from a security perspective, this is not really desirable. And so they violate the RFC and require that you explicitly bind to both of them. The problem with this was that at some point Ganglia assumed that this would work, that the RFC would be obeyed, turned on IPv6 support by just turning on IPv6 on all the sockets. And that meant that FreeBSD didn't work in any existing environment because all of a sudden there was no V4 traffic. And we went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and finally they went through and somebody found the time to re-architect the code so it wasn't a single socket program, which is what's required if you actually want to do secure and reliable V4 and V6 dual stack applications. So once that was done, it was all fine. It did take a while in part because they were using the Apache Portable runtime, which didn't have V6 support. And so that was a bit of a trick. So it was fixed. This does continue to represent a portability barrier. The good news is all the big applications like Apache and whatnot have all adapted to our model, but it's still a bit of an issue. The next application I'm going to talk about is SunGrid Engine. It's one of the leading open source batch systems. It's the other real contenders are the only other real contender, I think, is Torque, which is a derivative of OpenPBS. We actually started out with OpenPBS, which was this slightly weird semi-open source product that came out of the PBS batch system. They were under contract required to release the source, but they would release the source a year after they'd finished developing it, and you couldn't distribute patched versions for 4 years after that. As a result, the open source build was anything but stable. You know, it worked in my test lab, but when we brought it up on, I think, 16 machines, it would fall over regularly. It was pretty useless. Some of that was probably caused by the FreeBSD port being weak, but the general community consensus was it was unstable on every platform. Fortunately, Sun purchased a company whose name is escaping me at the moment, and brought in Grid Engine, which has a long history. Raytheon spent a lot of money on it in the past and sold it, but it's another system, and it's currently developed out of one of their German offices, and they open sourced it, and we were able to do a port. One community contributor started a port. It almost worked. We finished it up to the point that code ran, and then from there we enhanced it. So the first issue we ran into with Sun and Grid Engine is its build system. It is unique. It's based around one nearly 3,000 line C shell script, which pulls in several thousand more lines of includes. It's called AIMK for maximum confusion in the high performance computing community, since there is an actual portable make called AIMK that's part of PVM that attempts to address portability. This script is just hard coded. Every operating system, and in fact, every operating system architecture pair had its own giant switch statement, usually a couple or a block in a switch statement. Usually they had a couple of them. You know, so each Linux had, there was a Linux 2.4 and a Linux 2.6. And then there was the A Linux and the S Linux for Alpha and Spark, respectively. Each of which had their own definitions with no consistency at all. And I was coming in here with FreeBSD saying, okay, I'm on i386. I know I'm going to be moving to AMD 64 sometime. And really, I don't want to change the code every time we add a new architecture. So the first thing I ended up doing was refactoring all this junk and adding the ability to, for instance, build the autoconf, do the autoconf runs in the places where it was necessary. If the pre-generated and hand-edited stuff that they had been doing for each architecture wasn't there, that cleaned things up a lot overall. In addition to the script and makefiles and autoconf, there was also a custom dependency generator, so you run a dependency generator, and then you build everything, and it's still quite a mess. It's really targeted at a corporate build environment where there were build engineers to spend all their time and remember all of the steps. One of the big things for us that made it possible to manage this is I quickly wrote a FreeBSD port so all the steps were written down and in order, and so it was a reproducible build. There's also, recently, they've added some Java components, which I think unfortunately still use Ant, and I've not gotten those ported. So I was saying earlier, I've improved the multi-architecture support, so now there's a single FreeBSD block. You know, it's not much, but it was a major change in the overall architecture. And then pushed for, and I think eventually drove, a standardization of platform names. So they're all FBSD-architecture, as opposed to the random names that Linux distributions have. The Linux people have all moved now to, an LX 2.4 or an LX 2.6 and dash architecture. As I was saying, the port build really helped. At one point in the ports, we were actually grabbing the compiled Java bits out of the Sun repositories. They've stopped shipping them under a license where that's possible. So at some point, I or somebody needs to get the Java build support working. So once the build system worked, or more or less worked, the next thing we had to do was deal with portability defines. One of the problems with this code base is it has been around forever and supports a number of strange architectures or relatively strange architectures. So for instance, it supports Cray Unix, where integers were 64 bits and POSIX compatibility was a disaster. All the functions that assumed 32-bit ints, and additionally, it predated C99 standard types, or even the sort of ad hoc fixed width types before that. So we ended up with a lot of messy defines like these. I've been pushing them to try to adopt general POSIX standards and whatnot, but so far haven't met success. There's still old HPUX and AIX ports. In the system, and I think still some Cray stuff. I'm not sure it actually works, but it's still there. Additionally, in addition to generally building and doing normal user manipulation stuff, SGE has host metrics. They're very similar to Gangwea in scope, although they're not quite as easy to find. With Gangwea, there is just one big file with a bunch of functions that stub into a little table of function pointers. In SGE, they're scattered all around the tree. I basically ended up grepping for Linux and finding and then adapting the code for every one of those cases. So that worked, but it was kind of a pain. You know, the metrics are really the same sort of things. You know, number of CPUs, system load, memory, that sort of thing. One interesting bit to port in GridEngine is a system called the Portable Data Collector. It's used to gather some of the metrics, but rather than being a host-level system, it's a job-level system. And a job, in this case, is a process which is started by GridEngine and all of its children. And so for resource accounting and system management, you need to be able to total up resource use among those processes, and you want to be able to do it at runtime rather than waiting for them all to die and reap it through the and reap that data then, because you might have set a limit on CPU usage or total memory usage or something like that. And so they came up with a really clever hack. What they wanted was the IRIX job system, where jobs where a job could be allocated and it would have an ID and all the children would have that ID, and you could set limits on the collective group of processes. But that wasn't available everywhere, and they weren't going to go and try to modify all these proprietary kernels they were supporting. So instead, they came up with this clever hack, which is that they add a for each job on a given node, they allocate a special group, which is never used for anything, or never used for any permission handling, and they stuff that into the supplemental group list. The advantage is that since none of these jobs are running as root, they can't change their supplemental group list. And as a result, you can track all the processes in a given job by walking the process table and looking at which ones are in this supplemental group. It's a cute hack, kind of evil. And in particular, our current implementation is quite evil because we actually also use KVM. And so we walk the active process table looking for processes to kill, which is exciting. So it does work. It was an interesting challenge to port. And it was actually pretty interesting to see which ifdefs we used in which places, because in some places the interfaces we were using were identical to HPUX, and in other cases they were identical to, I think, Solaris. And then in some cases we had to write our own. So it was kind of interesting to see the array of different interfaces across Unix and how we sort of fit into that. A quick aside, another sort of general portability issue that bit me in this case, but it's more general, is signal handling. Early on, all of Grid Engine's signal handling was sort of BSD-ish. And they were using SIGSET and in some cases using Signal, but it was easy to patch. I just love this quote about signals in general, about the whole signal handling mess. It turns out, basically, I convinced Sun when they added a whole bunch of SIGSET things is that sensing? Well, when they added a bunch of System 5 signal things which doesn't behave like our signal, to switch those all over to SIG action, that worked for a while. They did fix them all. They said, "Oh, we should use the standard interface," and then they quickly decayed and they went back to using signal at a whole bunch of places. There is a set of functions that we should be implementing. We could actually implement System 5 interfaces quite easily. And there's code in NetBSD, so we really ought to do that. They just implement them in terms of SIG action, and that would increase our portability. The last program I want to talk about, and this will be fairly brief, is OpenMPI. It's the message passing interface is really the primary toolkit for building message passing parallel applications. The other one out there of any significance is PVM, of which there's basically one implementation plus some vendor enhancements on some of the larger proprietary systems. In the case of OpenMPI, it's a fork of the LAMMPI project. It's largely run at Cisco, though with a bunch of university involvement, and merges a few other smaller MPI projects. The other big contender in the space is MPitch. And both of these have commercial derivatives. In the MPI, the OpenMPI case, their Sun ships a version of it, and there are a few others. So this was one of the easiest HPC tools we've ported, in large part because it's a very new code base. It's only, I think, 4 years old now. And they did a pretty much from scratch re-architecture. I'm sure they swiped code out of the other pieces for to implement various features, but fundamentally, it's a whole new build system, a whole big fancy C++ class hierarchy, and an awful lot of AutoConf. And since they had people who actually knew what they were doing with the AutoConf and it hadn't developed over years and years and years working around all sorts of AutoConf bugs, it's actually pretty functional. So one of the nice things is they knew that they needed to be portable to different systems. You know, Linux was ascendant at the time, but you know, they had seen operating systems come and go and the operating system fads over the years, and as a result, they did build for portability. And you know, they did have to support, you know, Solaris clusters and AIX clusters and whatever else was out there that their big customers were going to be using. So they really did build that in, which was nice. The one piece that we really had to add was support for the backtrace and the backtrace symbols functions that glibc has. There was a port already, so that was pretty easy to do. But these are something where we really ought to have them in the base. I believe there's some work in progress on some of this, but it's one of these things where that really was a good idea that Linux had there. One part of it that we haven't ported is PLPA, which is the Portable Linux Processor Affinity library. They built this. They actually built it to overcome an entertaining ABI problem. There was a patch for Processor Affinity. It's very much like our CPU set functionality originally. But there were patches floating around, and it took a long time to get into the mainline Linux kernel. And by the time it had, SUSE and Red Hat had shipped different versions of the patch with different ABIs, and then a completely different one went into Linux, into the mainline Linux. They all used the same syscall number, and all use almost the same interface. So this library actually makes calls directly to the syscall with the syscall function with different arguments to get different errors back to figure out which implementation it's running on, and works from there. So it's kind of cute. We really ought to implement it for FreeBSD because it's almost exactly the same API. It's really just copying from one form of CPU set vectors to another. But it's actually a pretty amusing case there. So one aside, more on the ports side of things, this is a case where things are not really ideal. One of the things in it with MPI implementations is there are quite a lot of them. We have ports for LAM, MPitch2, we might still have an MPitch port, an OpenMPI. There's also several others. And they're not just a libMPI. There's been no effort in the community to speak of to maintain any kind of ABI or even really API compatibility across these implementations. And as a result, they have little compiler wrappers, so you actually generally compile things with MPI CC, which just wraps CC and adds the right arguments. Whether you're linking or loading or whatever, or linking or compiling or whatever, and so they're sort of scattered all over the place. One of the problems we have right now is that they all install in different places. I think actually this slide might be slightly out of date. I think LAM does install in prefix, and MPitch2 might have been moved to install in prefix. I started installing OpenMPI and MPI OpenMPI in hopes other people would follow, but so far it hasn't happened. One additional oddity is because of these compiler wrappers, people actually tend to install multiple versions of MPI, of the same MPI version, because you need a different one for a different, if you want, say, a different Fortran compiler, you need install a different compiler wrapper. If someone's interested in a little ports project, it would be interesting to write an MPI wrapper, similar to the one that we use for Java. To simplify this and make it more generally useful. The standard approach in the HPC community is you decide which one you're going to use and then set your paths appropriately. It's reasonably functional, but I kind of think we could provide a better interface. It might be an interesting project, just a little shell scripting. So a general summary of the portability issues I've run into. The schema conflicts I alluded to are kind of a pain overall. I don't think there's any real getting around them, but they're there. There's something to keep an eye out for. And if you're developing an application where you think this might be a problem, think really hard about this area. Try to make it easier for your porters in the future. For the general BSD IPv6 socket behavior continues to be a pain. Fortunately, I think it's becoming less and less of a problem, but we still see people popping up and having to rewrite their applications because of it. The big moral of the story is don't write single socket code, because it won't work in V6. Weird build systems come up all the time. Fortunately, more modern stuff tends to have a better build system, although sometimes they use, they'll have chosen some esoteric make alternative, and if you're lucky, it's still developed. Sometimes it might be abandoned. The poor data type choices are a problem, although, again, modern code bases tend to be refactored to support POSIX APIs and modern versions of C, and things are better. But in the HPC world, you find a lot of really ancient code, some of which hasn't been touched for good reason, but sometimes it could use an update. There's an overall lack of good interfaces to get to some data. Having to go into KVM to get stuff is a royal pain. I think we're doing better. We're steadily improving things. We've had projects, for instance, creating libprocstat so you can get a variety of process statistics. And in general, that's been done through an interface where we've created sysctls to get to data rather than groveling around in kernel memory. But again, this is a case where it's sort of slowly building. One thing to keep in mind there is that if you are creating an interface to data, make sure it's really the right data and the right interface, because once we provide the interface, we're kind of stuck with it, because people start building applications on it and expecting them to work. So we have to provide binary compatibility there. Some small issues with the signal handler setup that I alluded to. Fortunately, we just need to grab some code from that BSD, and largely somebody needs to do it. The files are very thin; they're very thin wrappers over the interface, which is nice. And it would be really nice if somebody would take libexecinfo, get it to work on all the platforms, or at least all the ones anyone really cares about, and get it into libc. That would help quite a bit. So, a few more tools to think about porting if you're interested. PAPI is a good case. PLPA would be interesting to port. It's being used in a number of HPC tools. It started in OpenMPI, but it's actually being used in Grid Engine now. One thing there is actually they're replacing it with a new tool, a new library, which combines another set of interfaces which provide you with information about caches so that you can attempt to make more intelligent decisions about, I don't want to just bind to some random CPUs with numbers, in some pattern, but actually look at the cache and say, I want to bind to a set of CPUs which share a cache or which don't share a cache or which share, this particular set of caches. And that's on the OpenMPI website. I can't remember the name at the moment. PAPI is another good one. We actually have a port of PAPI. It's a performance analysis toolkit, which on FreeBSD rides on top of the PMC stat, or HWPMC interface, and we're rapidly adding new CPUs. George Neville Neal gave a talk about adding it to MIPS just at this conference. And it's a potential for a huge win for FreeBSD. The reason is high-performance computing community uses this as a standard feature. It's used everywhere, but it's not in mainline Linux because Linux doesn't like it. However, we ship it out of the box. And either porting PAPI or going out to the HPC community, looking at the performance tools, finding one that seems like it would do something you want to do, and porting that could be really helpful in terms of getting here and getting a system where people could install their operating system with the generic kernel, download a couple ports, and be doing interesting performance analysis rather than having to void the warranty on their Red Hat kernel in order to do this work. Another thing that might be interesting if you're into IDE development is there's some work ongoing. It's been going for many years. I'm not quite sure where they are, sort of slow progress, but There's an Eclipse Parallel Tools platform plugin. It's built on top of the C plugins, but it intends to add parallel debugging support to Eclipse and parallel job starting. They're actually using some of the underlying infrastructure of OpenMPI to start the jobs and communicate with the processes across the cluster. You know, the grand goal is to be something like TotalView. They're a long ways from that, but probably an interesting project to port that bit forward. For someone with a lot of time, an extra credit project would be to take the ROCKS clustering system, which started as a Linux system but has added Solaris support, so they've done a lot of the refactoring, and add FreeBSD support. Their general philosophy is that you bring up a system with a clean basic install, and then you use the OS's package manager to add all the packages you need, and then configure them. In theory, that you're supposed to configure them as an experienced professional would configure them. They don't always hit that mark, but it's an interesting system, and it's an easy way to deploy large clusters of reasonably identical systems. And they have a number of neat things. So that would be kind of a cool project if somebody had a bunch of time on their hands. So in conclusion, we've ported a number of HPC tools to FreeBSD as part of running our cluster. There's still a number of portability challenges, but I think actually things are overall getting better. You know, there's always the problem that when one operating system produces a popular new feature and people start using it, other operating systems either have to have it or you know, work around it. But in general, things are actually doing pretty well. I think we do have some opportunities to grab market share by providing better tools, things like PAPI, or we're now in 9 planning to ship the Clang compiler, which if you've seen the examples of error messages, is spectacularly better at providing useful output than GCC. So I encourage people to go out, port things, and you know, try this stuff out. So I'm happy to take any questions.
I guess the obvious one, I guess, to really shift is OpenMP.
So OpenMP.
It's an opposite model with MPR.
Yes. So, well, we should support it to the extent that GCC does at the moment. Because the GCC OpenMP implementation is based on pthreads. So I believe we do in fact support it. I think some of my users are using it, and it seems to work okay for them.
We're a weather shop, so I get to bring up the F word and ask about Fortran 90 and 95, wondering if you have any at all good advice on FreeBSD solutions.
Well, so assuming that the newer GCCs don't cut it for you. The Lay Fortran is in the past offered FreeBSD binaries. They've been sometimes well hidden. We've also successfully, with a prior version of the Intel compiler, we succeeded in shimming it, and no one's really managed to do it again with a modern version. I think it was with 8 we got it working. You know, it shouldn't be impossible, and Intel did provide some backdoor support. So, you know, I think that's a possibility. the other option is if the parsers are okay in the modern GCCs, then there's a new LLVM project called Dragon Egg, which uses GCC. Basically, it's a way to use GCC 4.5 is a front end, and then LLVM is a back end. And at least one physicist, Nathan Whitehorn, who's doing a lot of our PowerPC work, finds that Clang produces much better code for a lot of numerical applications. That the LLVM register allocator, while far from perfect, is better than GCC 4 in general. I think he said 4.5 was starting to get back to decent, but it was really atrocious in the early versions.
The last I had done it was I had shimmed the deck Fortran compiler on the FreeBSD alpha.
Yeah.
Which actually worked out quite nicely.
Yeah, unfortunately, the new no one's done the work to shim the new Intel compiler. That would be pretty cool if somebody could do it. Anyone else? Well, thank you.